Welcome to Ile de Besançon. It's wonderful to have you all aboard. Paging Chris Halpin to the customs desk, please. Internet, and welcome. It's Ellie here. Once again, we're at the beautiful Ile de Besançon, where somehow we managed to make it early May all year round. The sun is shining, there are dappled clouds, there's a very light breeze, but the temperature's really comfortable. It's sort of hot enough that you can lie around outside, but not so hot that you don't think you can do anything. It's perfect here. The only thing that's not perfect is our musical import strategy. We only allow you to bring 8 Eurovision and Eurovision connected songs with you during your stay. And here I am, Ellie, at the customs desk to thoroughly interview you and find out your reasons for bringing those 8 special songs. There's some business with a luxury later on, and unlike other castaway destinations, we don't give you the Bible and Shakespeare, we give you Waterloo and Valare, which were much more fun at parties. And we've got a castaway just coming up the jetty, fresh from the seaplane. Could I take your name, please?
Hello, my name is Chris Halpin.
And what's your occupation and connection to the Eurovision Song Contest?
Ooh, well, I am officially I am the associate editor at weeweeblogs.com, and I'm also, I like to call myself the supporting actor of our YouTube channel, usually like the third or fourth one that you'll notice, but I am also there.
If you get nominated in the supporting actor category, you usually get the Oscar first.
Well, yeah, exactly, so I'm gonna have my little trophy and enjoy my little gold man.
A trophy, yes, enjoy your little gold man. Yeah. A trophy's a trophy.
Yeah.
It's gone totally off the rails and we haven't even started yet. So you're here on Ile de Besançon.
Yeah.
You're sort of first from outside the immediate ESC Insight family.
I am. I feel special.
Are you going to be okay with all of us nerds?
Well, my Eurovision nerddom goes way too far, really. So I think I will fit in perfectly well at home. I mean, I'm quite glad that I'm on the Ile de Besançon. The last island I was on, I was just assigned a number and chased by a big white sphere just around the island. So that
That's horrible.
It was quite horrible. Yeah.
We don't talk about them there. No, that's good.
That's good. But no, I am. I think I featured on one ESC Insight podcast before, just at the start of Vienna, the Vienna 2 weeks, and that was a magical start of an experience, really.
They say if you can remember Vienna, you weren't there.
Well, I mean, Euroclub, that was that definitely took a few brain cells away, I think, after all that. Good old Austrian alcohol.
So shall we get to the paperwork?
Yes, we shall.
Actual paper rustling sound. Yeah. Not a sound effect. Your first record is the most recent winning song by the UK. It's 1997's Love Shine a Light by Katrina and the Waves. Please stand for the national anthem. Okay, so now you can put your lighter down.
Yep,
you can stop
light
waving
it down.
Stop waving your phone light. Please explain to me why you want to bring Love Shine a Light.
So, as I think many people in the Ile de Besançon have, this is my first time. This is my first Eurovision that I remember, at least. And it's really weird because Love Shine a Light. So, I think I first heard this on Radio 2. I think they did some kind of pre-selection round, and I don't quite remember it. But I just remember, I think it was Ken Bruce, and he introduced it, and I just remember hearing it and thinking, this song is amazing. Little six-year-old Chris thought this was the best thing he'd ever heard. Previously, I think it had been Wet, 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 so it's probably a step up from that, really. And then I remember, you know, the national final, and Then Eurovision itself, I don't remember much, apart from annoying my family because I was pretending to be Terry Wogan and just commentating along throughout the night, as I often do now, just commentating throughout and annoying all my friends when they're around me. And I just remember thinking, this is amazing. And after that point, I was hooked. It was just such an amazing event, and it awoke something in me.
The idea of you pretending to be a tiny Wogan is so adorable.
Yeah, I don't think my parents thought that. I vaguely remember at one point they were like, okay, Chris, quiet now.
Did you dress up? Was there a wig?
I don't remember dressing up, and I don't remember putting on the Irish accent either, but I may have.
You were Woganing away to the best of your ability.
I was Woganing as much as I could. But yeah, I think the song itself, it doesn't feel like a 90s Eurovision song. Because sometimes in Eurovision in the 90s, there was some very overtly cheesy, I think. And this has got cheese, but in a hope and, like, it sweeps you away with it.
Well, yeah, when I say please stand for the national anthem, it's anthemic.
Yeah, totally. And especially at the time, I mean, at the time I wasn't really aware of it, but when you think New Labour had literally just come to power, it was sort of... the future was bright for the UK. Things could only get better, as it were. And they actually did. And then
slow descent downhill
towards Josh Dubovy.
Yeah, that's the worst thing that's happening in Britain today.
Yeah, the idea of Josh Dubovy, no. I just think that it is just such a special song for me. And I think it is a special Eurovision song. It's one of those where you could imagine a drunk Euro club just all swaying along, singing it together. I think I might actually have to try and arrange that at some point next year in Lisbon.
Are we not doing this tonight?
Well, probably, yeah.
Well, you know, there's not really any way that I can turn this down. It's your origin story. It's given us a beautiful image of a tiny Wogan. It's a UK winner. We'd never turn down winners. Winners are always welcome. We never turn down any records, unless you pick nine. So obviously, we'll accept Katrina, The Waves, and Love Shine a Light.
Good start.
For your second record, you're going from something which is kind of an obvious pick to something which is a slight deep cut. We're going back to the 2012 Swiss National Final. Is this one of the ones where they just start out with the big public upload bucket?
So this wasn't one of those. This was the Italian broadcaster, but the whole thing had the good old Swiss upload. Anybody and everybody and everything really could enter, no matter what.
So this is Chiara Dube with Anima Nuova. Questa storia selvaggia ti innamorerà e sognerai per non lasciare che mai smettano gli occhi tuoi di brillare e riderai, ferma la terra esplode d'amore e lo senti la musica di quest'aria di libertà. Okay, so explain to me how you heard this, why you like it, and yeah, your story.
So this is my second Eurovision origin story, I must admit.
Is this when you started getting into the hard stuff?
It was, yeah. So I remember I was always a fan and I always watched the final and I would kind of vaguely pay attention to the semi-finals. And then 2011, I was at uni and for some reason I just went deep in during the actual Eurovision week. And I sort of was aware that there were national finals.
It's
and stuff
exam
like that.
Time, usually.
It was exam time.
Has that got any connection?
Well, thankfully, my course was, I don't want to say it was a bit of a DOS, but it probably was, in that...
What subject was it?
It was broadcast journalism.
Oh, right.
So there you go, at Leeds Uni, good old BJs, as we used to call ourselves. Yeah, we got a lot of looks when we had our I Heart BJ tops on.
Lovely, lovely.
So we didn't have exams, actually, in 2011. We just had to do coursework throughout the year. So I could just go in, and all my friends, of course, were busy actually doing... My housemates were all doing exams.
As somebody who had to do hard maths every year during my degree, I'm looking a little bit askance at you.
Yes, I do apologise. I know lots of people were very angry when I used to put on Facebook, not doing anything tonight. But anyway, so got into it in 2011, really got involved, and then... sort of Twitter, I became aware of the Eurovision people. That was just growing. It's nothing like it is today. And somehow I ended up getting to the Swiss-Italian broadcasters national final. And I came in halfway through. It was actually the one that Sim Plus were on. And they, of course, they ended up making it all the way through to Baku. And the first song I heard was Anima Nuova. And I just remember literally falling in love with the song. It's a very sweet, almost lullaby. And Chiara Dubé has an amazing voice. She entered in 2013 as well, the Swiss national final, and didn't do as well. This came top three. It beat Lise Asia as well. So she has at least beaten a Eurovision winner in some form. But I just think the actual lyrics of the song, kind of when I look at it back now, you know, it's talking about a new soul and the journey through music that you go through. And I have been on quite a journey through music in the 6 years since I first heard it. And I just think it's very touching and tender and lovely. And I feel like if it had entered Eurovision now, post-Salvador in a way, it would almost be treated better because you can, it's been proven that you can do something a bit different and you can do well with it.
Nuance isn't dead.
Exactly, exactly. And then, you know, Switzerland ended up sending Sim Plus with Unbreakable and Swimming Against the Stream in their dreams.
I know people who really like that.
I know. Yeah, I preferred, was that the, oh no, I was going to say that wasn't the year of the Albanian rock song. I think it was the year later that was really good.
Yeah,
Identitet.
Yeah,
I really like that one. I think Sam good. Ross likes that one as well. I've definitely remember that. But Anima Nuova, I think, is just, it's just touching, and it touches me every time I hear it. I think it's just very sweet, and not Eurovision enough that it would work at Eurovision.
Did you have that slight, oh, Chiara was robbed feeling when she didn't win?
I think I did. I think that was also one of my first, oh my God, how did this not happen, of the national finals? Because again, I think that was my first Melfest, all of these. And that was definitely the first one I remember thinking, oh my God, how did this not make it? Chiara was robbed.
Yeah, I think as well as the origin story that comes up in a lot of these customs interviews, the first time where somebody felt robbed is a very important moment because that's how you know you're hooked.
Yes. See, I was lucky actually because I had bet on Azerbaijan winning in 2011. So that was sort of me dipping my toe in. That was a complete random chance. I was like, oh, they look good. I'll bet on them. Thank you, SIM cards in different countries. And then I wanted Euphoria to win in 2012. So it took until Children of the Universe in 2014 for me to actually get to Eurovision and think, this is the song that should win, and end up heartbroken at the end of the night.
A lot of us were heartbroken in 2014.
Yeah.
But I think Conchita was sufficient compensation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we will accept Anima Nuova. And I hope everybody enjoys it who's never got the chance
exactly.
to hear it before.
It's one of those sad things that a lot of those NFs from 2012, 2013 are actually kind of lost now because obviously Eurovision took down a lot of the streams and things like that. And people, there's a lot of great songs that I still listen to from that era that are kind of lost to the ether now.
It's going to be like 1960s Doctor Who. Like, you can't watch most of the Patrick Troughton stories, and now you can't watch most of the, well, late noughties, early teens, national finals. And I don't know which is the greater loss to culture.
Well, I think I would personally have the Eurovision ones, but yeah. I think everybody...
There are some people who would walk over glass to get the Patrick Troughton.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, so we'll move on to your third record. We have the perennial Danish fave from 1963, Greta and Jørg Ingermann's Dansevis.
Solstrål i en vandpyt, et lille kindkys af en vind, og Sive der nynner, at livet begynder sit spænd i dit sind. Sølvfløjt fra en trætop, svagt fat lyd af en kat, en ryslen i bækken, en vislen i hækken, der siger, at ikke mere er nat.
Beautiful, haunting Nordic stuff. Would you like to explain why you like this song from 1963?
I think it is because it's beautiful, beautiful, haunting Nordic stuff.
Oh, right, okay.
There we go, everything. No, I think when I was getting into Eurovision, I would listen back to all the winners. And I know that this will get me in trouble with some people. There's a lot of the 50s and 60s that a lot of the songs aren't... They're not my cup of tea. I'm not saying that they're not good, but they're just not my cup of tea.
It's more than 50 years ago.
Everything will change. And yeah. I think that this was the first one where I remember just watching it. And it's almost hypnotic the way that Greta performs the song and the effects going on the screen, which were, you know, mind-blowing for the time at Eurovision particularly. I just think it's very haunting and hypnotic. And it draws you in. And it's actually kind of quite a nice song, but it almost feels quite dark as well. There's a darkness to it and a mystery. Obviously, the fact that it's in Danish means that when I first heard it, I had no idea what she was talking about. And then I've since gone on and listened back to it, and it has that sort of that nuance again. But also, I kind of love it, and this is bad, because it's one of the first examples of Eurovision drama. Because I kind of love a bit of Eurovision drama, and the voting in 1963 was an interesting one, to say the least, where Switzerland kind of nearly won, and then Norway just changed their votes at the last second so that Denmark could win.
Another Nordic noir mystery.
Yes. The bridge has nothing on this.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there's the guitar... It almost harkens back. It makes me think of Amapella Stoys, actually, because you can kind of see the progression from 1963 all the way to 2017, how Eurovision has that kind of common thread that, you know, a solo performer doing a very haunting but touching song can actually really work.
The things which move people don't change. Yeah. Like presentation and instrumentation and sort of trends in like lyrical expression and everything, that can all change, but really everybody is still moved in the same way.
Exactly. And I think that's where it's subtle as well, like Amapella Stoys. I think a lot of the earlier ones around it are kind of very, they'll hit you in the head, mainly because it's just like it feels like a lot of loud vocals, and Greta has a soft vocal that when she needs to, she can go for it. But otherwise, I think it's just very, very subtle, very nice, and it hooks you straight away.
Accepted.
Yes. Going well so far, this.
Okay, so your fourth record is Amsterdam by Maggie McNeil, representing the Netherlands in 1980.
And the ears of Belkens in Amsterdam. Is van alles aan de gang. Amsterdam bestaat al eeuwenlang. Amsterdam, de stad waar alles kan. Amsterdam, iedereen die weet ervan.
It's as Dutch as a pair of old clocks.
It is. It's another one of those where I just would love a good old drunk sing-along of it. At the heart of it, this is a song about a city, and there's no nuance in the lyrics, really. I mean, you can look at them and it really is just Amsterdam, come visit it sometime. It's almost like what I Love Belarus wanted to be, but just couldn't quite get the nail on the head.
I Love Belarus is a thing all of its own.
Yes, a glorious thing all of its own. We'll get to Belarus shortly, I think, on my list, but Eurovision 1980, I think, is actually the first time where you can look at Eurovision that year and you can then see how it's progressed every year since then. You know, like I said, a lot of the 50s, 60s, 70s stuff, it's a hard slog for me to get through. Eurovision 1980, I went back and watched the entire thing through. It's the first Eurovision where it kind of nearly didn't happen. It went through about four different countries refused to host it. And then eventually the Netherlands were like, we'll throw something together. It's the start of the Johnny Logan whole saga, and you can see sort of the island tread that went through after that. You know, there's some great songs. Katja Ebstein is there. Ralph Ziegel's involved with Papa Penguin, which is one of the most bizarrely staged Eurovision entries I've ever seen.
It's not the start of the modern contest, but a lot of the actors are beginning to take to the stage.
They're taking their place. They're figuring it all out. And in between it all, there's Maggie McNeil. And she'd obviously had experience of Eurovision before with Mouth and McNeil. I See a Star is a great song. And I feel it almost overshadows Amsterdam. Because obviously that's the one that a lot of people do harken back to. It was a Dutch song that was sung in English. It was the year of Waterloo. And then this one comes along in the ramshackle year. But it's just so powerful. She could sing about anything. She is literally singing about a city, but she makes you feel the passion and the love that she has for it. And
that's more than you get from a sort of a tourist jingle, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, I would actually like to be on maybe an open-top bus tour of Amsterdam that Maggie McNeil wanted to narrate, maybe.
I don't know. I wouldn't go around Amsterdam on a bus. Canal boat.
Canal boat, yes. Yeah. That would probably be more. Or a tandem bike for two. But I think she's just such a great vocalist. Again, I think that's the track I love. If somebody can sing well, I will immediately love you, because I can't sing for love nor money. And I think if you can, then I will applaud you and I will immediately think, you know what, you're great. And then she delivers it with the song as well and the performance. One of my favourite things about 1980 as well, it's during the voting sequence, and you see Johnny Logan getting his points, and you know, he's sort of neck and neck with people for a while, and in the background you just see Maggie McNeil just smoking away. Like, she's having a great time. Drink, cigarette, you know, she'd been there before, she can enjoy it.
Probably going to need to go and make a gif of that.
Yes, it is somewhere. I think it's probably about an hour and 20 in from memory. And 1980, actually...
You didn't need to tell me the timestamp.
Oh, no, I know. It's just bonkers. Again, that was the first... I think it was the only way that... Was it Tunisia? It's one of the Arab countries. It's the only year that they entered, because Israel didn't. Lebanon. It was definitely one of them. Morocco. And, you know, there's electro kind of entering it. I think Belgium, they have the song Eurovision, which is bonkers. It's just bonkers, and I love it because it kind of breaks away from the... We're very traditional Eurovision and starts us on that path. And Amsterdam, by far and away, I think, is the best song of that year.
Accepted. Okay, and you love Belarus. I love Belarus. It's SoCal by Nadezhda Mizyakova, Junior Eurovision 2014.
I think that's the way to put it. It's Belarus when they want to do well.
They can as well.
They can.
Which makes the nonsense years all the more frustrating.
Belarus are probably one of, if not my favourite Eurovision country, because they just don't understand it sometimes. They get it at points. Navi certainly was right. But they kind of are one of those countries where they think they have a great idea, and then it actually turns out to either be 5 years out of date or 10 years out of date or completely bonkers.
Naked with a wolf.
Naked with a wolf. Completely bonkers. But they're kind of endearing for that because, you know what, they'll just throw anything and it might work. And then SoCal came along. And I will admit, I'm not the biggest Junior Eurovision fan. I had tried it before the 2014 contest. I had watched the 2012 one live, but I had never really been hooked. I think it's because here's a lot of very, very talented children, and here I am probably just sat there on a sofa thinking...
I find it a bit of a tough watch because there's always a risk that the very talented children might mess up, and that would be really upsetting.
Yeah,
like, I can't stand the tension.
I hate awkward situations at the best of times, and a crying child on stage would not be good. And then I remember starting listening to the 2014. That was just as I started at WeWee Blogs, and this was my first kind of Eurovision contest that had come along. And SoCal came along, and I just thought, this is incredible. And I think it's better than anything Belarus had put out, bar maybe Koldun at that point, at actual adult Eurovision. Work Your Magic kind of is just one of those cheesy ones that I'm like, you can't not like
it. I'm swaying in my chair. Yeah.
If I could stick to the wall, then I would right now. And Nadezhda's a great performer, again, amazing vocalist. She has this kind of, it's sort of anotherworldly kind of aura about the performance, about the song. It's folky, and again, you can kind of see the Navi tread from there. And it's something that Belarus really should have honed in on and realized this is good and this is something that we could do, until, you know, it took 3 years for them to get to the Navi point.
Noteki are going to discover the balalaikas soon.
Oh, God, Noteki. I mean, eventually they have to make it. Eventually. I kind of feel like at this point, I almost want to put them out of their misery and just have Noteki get there.
Only if they go folk.
Only if they go folk. Please, Belarus, just keep something that is good. I think the Belarusian language is quite lovely as well, and it is. It's a fascinating microcosm of a country. And I think I could have gone the easy route and picked Navi for this, but I feel like SoCal was my first Belarusian one that I truly was like, this is really good. You should do this. And they didn't do that great in the end, I think, on the night. I think she just made it to the left-hand side of the scoreboard. Junior Eurovision 2014, I think, hands down, is possibly one of the strongest Eurovision fields that has ever been put together in any form, really. You know, adult, junior, whatever.
Young Dancers.
I've never watched Young Dancers, I'm not going to lie, so maybe say that.
Possibly with the exception of the Young Dancers, it's the strongest Eurovision field ever.
One of the song contests, of the song contests, we'll go with that caveat, because there's a lot of really, really talented performers and great songs in that year. Slovenia was Nisi Sam, Vincenzo obviously, Betty was there, Lizzie Pop, who, of course, is now going to host Junior Eurovision, which I'm so happy for, because she is going to do such a good job. I think this was the standout of that year for me, and it's just a standout Belarusian track. And I love native language songs, if you can't already tell from my list. I think it's great when a performer can hook me in a language that I don't understand, but I don't care by that point, because you're that good.
Well, it turns out the kids are all right. Accepted. Okay, so we are going for your sixth record. Would you like to introduce this one?
So my sixth record, it's another native language song. It's the Netherlands 1998. It's Cecilia with Hemel en Aarde. Hemel en Aarde bewegen als je voor me staat. Het is voor mij bewezen dat het lot bestaat. Hemel en Aarde gaan open als je mij aanraakt. Ik wilde nooit geloven, maar er is meer tussen hemel en aarde.
You seem to like the Netherlands.
I do like the Netherlands. They are one of my countries that I just do, for some reason, tend to favour at Eurovision. You kind of get weirdly attached to some countries, I think. I mean, it's Belarus, Netherlands, kind of Switzerland for me.
I feel like Netherlands are trying their best, but they're sort of next to Belgium, which has hit this unearthly streak of form. And so no matter what the Netherlands do, which they're doing just fine right now.
Oh, yeah.
People are always going to be talking about Belgium instead.
Yeah. And Netherlands kind of started that curve, of course, in 2013 with the Nuke, which again nearly made it onto this list. I'm not going to lie, because I think that is another really sterling female vocalist. But Edcilia, so this is part of the problem for me, was that growing up, I would listen to these songs and really not get a chance to listen to them again after the night, because we didn't record the contest from memory and we didn't go out and buy, I don't even know whether there really were CDs and things at the time of the contest.
Yes.
I think that one might have been the first year, I think, from memory. 98 maybe? I don't know. I do know, though, for one thing, that Katrina and the Waves was actually the first single I ever bought. Love, Shine a Light.
Really?
I probably should have mentioned that earlier. But yeah,
you should have done.
It was, I went out on the Sunday after the contest, and we went to HMV in Manchester, and I made my mum buy the cassette of Love, Shine a Light.
A ca-single.
It was a ca-single, and I remember also driving her mad with that. But Hema Lynada, I remember loving at the time. I loved Diva. And Diva will forever be one of my favourite Eurovision songs as well. But Hema Lynada, kind of looking back and again revisiting a lot of the contests, this is one that's always stood out to me. Kind of underrated. It came fifth, but a lot of people don't really know it. A lot of people, when they talk about the Netherlands, it'll be like Ruth Chakot or Linda Vanamakers a couple of years later. This one kind of always skirts under the radar. I'm like, no, this is great. This is really, really good. And it was the last year of the language rule as it came to pass. And I just think it's a great live performance as well. A lot of the times, and ironically, we're inducting the record. I'm trying to bring that with me. But the live performance of a Eurovision song can really lift it, I think. The record's good, don't get me wrong. But I think live, she really, really delivers it. And there's just something, it's a very simple, she's literally just standing there, kind of shuffling around on stage, but she has that live presence. And there's not many artists who have presence always at Eurovision. Sertab Erener is another one, Every Way That I Can, which is one of my favourites again. And, you know, people like Salvador, like Jamala, Dami Eam, they have presence, and that's always a great thing, and it usually shows in a result.
It's the presence, the charisma. It's such a hard thing to really quantify, but you just see it and you go, oh, yeah.
You've got it.
Yeah,
it is not to use the term, but it is the X factor almost.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means. No. We
don't have that here.
We don't have that.
But yes, accepted for Woo. Your devotion to the Dutch language.
Yes.
And we're coming to the 21st century once more. We have France 2009, Patricia Kaas, Et s'il fallait la faire. Okay,
that
dish on Patricia.
That is timeless, I think. That could have entered Eurovision in 1956. That could have entered Eurovision in the 70s and the 80s. It could have entered Eurovision whenever, because Patricia Kaas is that damn good. She is... It is that charisma. It is that uniqueness.
Nerve
and talent. 100%. She can definitely chanté and stay.
Yeah.
And she does chanté right at the end of the song.
Yay!
That little kind of... I don't want to call it a jig. It's a movement. It's a dance movement she does towards the end of the song into the little curtsy. This is the first time I heard a Eurovision song, and I remember thinking, I need to go and listen to everything you've ever done. And I did. I went and I downloaded as many of her albums as I could, and I have been a fan of Patricia Kaas ever since then. She has just such a vocal ability and talent and strength that she's enchanting. And it's one of those very rare things, I think, to find an artist where you are, I need to know everything and I need to hear everything. And she has been that for me.
I think it actually happens quite a lot for Eurovision fans. And that is one of the reasons why I would encourage any artist who feels like stuck in their home market to give it a go. Because you're not going to be Celine Dion. No. You're not going to be ABBA. But what you are going to get is this sort of network of devoted, deep fandom around the Eurovision area. And, you know, as we always say, you'll never be short of a cruise in September.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Or a night at the RVT in London.
Yeah.
I think you do get attached, and it's a great thing. I think there is always going to be somebody that loves a Eurovision song and a Eurovision artist. There's always going to be somebody, and you can think that you are, you know, nobody likes you as an artist or whatever, and there will be somebody who will stand for your song, particularly on Twitter these days.
There will also be somebody who really disagrees with you for liking your song.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes. I think I got into quite a lot of trouble with that when I was defending a particular Spanish national final song from 2017, which I won't go into. It was Micah and the rock song. Because people don't like rock at Eurovision.
What's wrong with them?
There is nothing wrong with rock at Eurovision. And so I vaguely remember getting into quite a few arguments with Spanish Eurovision fans who are very...
You should join in our fan contest, the Eurovision Prog Contest, where we nominate awesome rock bands from around the continent.
It's perfect. I mean, I think, going back to Patricia Cass, because that was quite a slight digression. Rock to Patricia Cass. I mean, she is an artist who I wouldn't be surprised if she just decided, you know, I'm going to do rock sometime. She did Edith Piaf and was incredible. It's just one of those performances where I go back and I can watch it again and again and again and again, and I will never not love it. And 2009 is, again, one of the best contests, I think. If anybody hasn't watched it, then go back and watch it. I think there's a huge amount of talent there. And I do think any other year, this could have maybe done even better. That was a year where... realistically, nobody was going to be Alexander Rybak by the time we got to the night.
Yeah.
I think the momentum was behind him. But France had been through some really rough times at Eurovision just before that. Sebastian Tellier was the year before, and I loved that.
I loved that as well.
Yeah.
I don't think people got...
I don't think the televote did from memory, but... that was their problem.
Well, at least everybody got over their beard phobia by 2014.
Oh, yes. Well, they even made that joke in the 2015 show, where Conchita was his backing singer, I think. And then, France kind of pit themselves up. But this is kind of this weird little microcosm of France doing France and Patricia doing Patricia Cass with not a traditional Eurovision song. And it blooming worked.
Vive la France.
Vive la France.
Accepted.
Merci.
And time for your final record. Oh, we just mentioned Belgium.
Yes.
Belgium 2015. It's lovely, Loïc Notet, and Rhythm Inside.
Be you enemy or brother, we were put here to discover the heart that beats within each other. We're gonna wrap up, up. Rap up, up, we gonna rap up, up tonight.
And if we die tomorrow, what do we have to show for the wicked ways down below? The rhythm inside is telling us we can fly.
Marvelous, marvelous. Okay, explain why you want this slab of incredibleness.
Yes, very Sia-esque, I think, was the word that always came to mind with Loïc. Obviously, he was a huge Sia fan. Eurovision 2015 was the first one I was live on the ground, so Vienna will always have a special place, and a lot of the songs from that year will have a special place in my heart for that reason. But Rhythm Inside is just one that really spoke to me, and Loïc as an artist really speaks to me. His album that he's released since then, there's a lot of talk about anxiety and the voices in your head and getting yourself down about things. And he's somebody that is massively talented. He can dance, he can sing, he can act, he could do anything that he wanted. And to hear an artist and for it to speak to you where it's like anybody can go through that and it's about getting through the other side... That's kind of why I always have this attachment to Loïc Notet and any of his work.
He's a fascinating artist because it's not just the vulnerability, it's the way he sort of has, like, alternate masculinities.
Yes.
And he's a bit of a chameleon. You know, you never get the same look twice, really.
Yeah. And he on stage, he has that confidence in droves, which, again, is something that I really admire, the ability to just go out there and perform and do it so magnificently, and then to come on stage and be a normal... I mean, he was young then. I think... I can't remember how old he was in 2015, but he was only... I think he was younger than 21. He was certainly younger than me.
He is a mere scrap of a thing.
He is. And, again, to have that ability to come on stage and do that, it's the same with a lot of the junior Eurovision kids, where I think it's that talent and the nerve to do that.
And that song, Rhythm Inside... So I've started going on a lot about the future sound of Eurovision. That's one of them. That's one of those records where, you know, Eurovision dads are saying, I don't like this, it's just noise, this isn't even music, like, where's the rest of the song?
Yeah.
But, no, that's it.
That is what I would want to see from Eurovision. And I grew to love Salvador, and obviously that's a very different style of music altogether.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of... You can see that it's going somewhere and it's trying to do something, and that's what I want. It's not just a cheesy pop song.
Yeah.
It's not bland.
The last thing you can accuse Rhythm Inside of is being a cheesy retread of something.
No. And I think, you know, that was the same year as Aminata, which again was very much, you can start to see, again, Latvia, another favourite country of mine, where they've finally figured themselves out a little bit. But Rhythm Inside, it's just... The stage performance, this was the one that I wanted to win of the year, 100%. I, again, had put money on it to win and didn't quite pull that one off. But I remember hearing it the first time and thinking, yes, this is it. This is the one for me. And it's the one, probably, of the last 3-4 years that I've played the most.
Everybody says that Belgium's got a win in them.
Yeah.
Do you think Belgium are going to win in an even year or an odd year?
Ooh. Well, I would have said odd, but I grew to love Laura Tesoro, and Laura Krusenek and the new girl, I really like some of the stuff that she's done as Senek. That is really stunning. So I don't think they have it in them this year, but I think they've definitely stepped up on both sides.
Yeah.
But I do think odd is probably more likely at the moment.
Yeah, just because odd are sort of slightly further up that gradient at the minute.
Exactly. They've got two against the one of...
The internal competition is causing excellence.
Yes, it is. Because I think after the Axel and... I forgot about Iris. As I often do forget about Iris, I'm not going to lie. In 2012.
Oh, yeah.
What would you do? I don't remember, love.
I wish I knew.
Yeah, I wish I knew. But yeah, they are coming along in leaps and droves, and I think I would love to go to Belgium, never been. So if they would like to do that, then I would quite like to go to Bruges, maybe, or...
Oh, mate, Bruno wants us to go to Belgium.
So it's one of those, it's on the list, but yeah, Belgium. But then again, we said that Hungary had a win in them. At one point, a few years back with Cassie Wolf, and, you know, Kedvesem did well, Andras Kalisaunders, and they've kind of dropped off the boil a little.
I don't know. I never thought that Hungary had a win in them, because they were excelling, but in all of these different directions.
Hmm.
And because they've got this public selection element, they can never be quite as focused about it as Belgium can, really.
But I think Hungary at least aren't afraid to go with something completely different as well.
Yeah, they've got no choice but to go with...
They've got no choice, really, to be honest, you're right. But yeah, Belgium, one of the... That Rhythm Inside is just pure pop perfection, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, of course you can have it. And we'll have endless discussions about Belgium.
Yes.
So we've given you the chance to import a Eurovision luxury to the island. What would you like to bring?
So I'm going to posit something and then maybe an additional thing to come with it.
All right,
which
go for
might
it.
Work.
Spit it out.
I once spent Lana Loboda's Hell Machine. possibly with the gladiators just hanging on to it, they can help ferry it across, because that was...
The stagehands, yes.
You need people to operate it.
The helm machine operators.
Yes,
okay.
That's what they were. So I would quite like the helm machine.
Well, that's quite good. We're getting some major pieces of staging on the island now. Yeah. We can put them all in the tent Euro Club that we now have set up in the centre of the island. Marvellous. It can take its place alongside Sinead Nevergreen's Rolly platforms, Nathan's glittery moon.
Have we got the hamster wheel yet?
No.
Well, anyway, it might double as a hamster wheel. We might be able to modify it for the time being.
Well, anyway, we can certainly all have some fun with that.
Oh, yes.
Are there any record? Well, is there one of these records in particular you would like to award a 12 points to?
If I had to choose one, it would probably be Ace of Valley L'Affair. It's between that and Rhythm Inside and Love Shine a Light. But I think Patricia Cass just
Take
holds
one.
That.
Okay,
Patricia Cass, yes. She holds that particularly special place in my heart.
Well, thank you very much
for indulging
us at the customs desk. Yeah. Would you like to plug anything before we let you go off to the island?
Oh, well, obviously visit weebieblogs.com and our YouTube channel. I also have my own little personal blog, which is 365 Days of Europe, which I update once every blue moon. But I am currently in the process of reviving that with a little... I'm ranking every song from 2012 onwards. So, yes, come join me with that whilst I complain about...
Spreadsheets.
Whilst I complain about Rambo Amadeus some more.
How
do you like that? Oh, no. Please let me keep everything on the island.
Okay, so I've been Ellie Chalkley, and this has been another episode of Eurovision Castaways for ESC Insight. Now bring on the guitars.